Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game with me, Kevin Day, and Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. You may already know there's a hint of excitement in my voice. That's because Kieran and I have just been chatting about our first news story. And of course, it's about his bestest friend ever. And you got a text from her, Kieran, didn't you?
I did from Tracy Crouch, who is delighted that the 10 recommendations of the fan-led review have been endorsed by the government. So happy about that. Not as happy about the time frame, I think it's fair to say. You know, in an ideal world, it would have been good if it was going into the next Queen's speech. I think realistically, we're looking at 2024. Before it comes into legislation. And I think the concern of quite a few people is that gives the lobbyists that the Premier League in particular will be using, and also potentially the Football Association itself, and their strategy will be, they'll be wheeling out the big guns to deny, discredit, and you know, dissuade people from endorsing all of the recommendations.
Yeah, I presume she said she was happy after a series of emojis, smiley face, and then a bit of, how are you, Kieran? I'm all right, thank you. When are you next in London? But she can't be happy about the Premier League reaction. I'm surprised by how publicly vehement they were. It wasn't a kind of, well, we welcome this, but there are issues. So it was like, no, we don't want it. We don't want an independent regulator. We'll do what we can to stop it, which I don't think PR-wise is a very good response.
Yes. The strategy will be, the Premier League's been very successful. So if it ain't broke, there's no need to fix it. And the thing is, the regulator is not going to be getting involved in day-to-day things. And a lot of the success of the Premier League is down to the broadcasting rights. Well, negotiating those contracts, that's down to the Premier League. Yeah. Nobody's suggesting that the regulator gets involved there. The Premier League's also saying, when people say, well, oh, hold on, six of your members were involved in Super League.
Yeah, right.
And it will be very noticeable, I think you will find, is that none of the representatives of those six clubs will be seen doing the radio interviews, doing the rounds of TV shows. It will be dropped down to, Villa and West Ham and Palace and Brighton people who are kind of say, we stopped the Premier, we stopped the Super League, completely ignoring the fact it was not the chief executives of those clubs that had any influence upon the decision to drop out of Super League. It was down to the fans. That gets quietly ignored. So I think it's my view, it's two cheers, perhaps two and a half, with regards to the comments from the government. And I got named in the House of Commons, which was rather bizarre. I was going, what what's it got to do with me?
What did they say? Was this Tracy Crouch in the Commons again? I couldn't have done it without Kieran.
No, it was Nigel Hullaston, who's the sports minister, because along with my very good friend Christina at the University of Portsmouth, I've not said anything about this, but we'd been commissioned by DCMS to do some research into the finances of the game with a view to saying these are the challenges. So the government put that out at the same time as the announcement, which as you know, I'm normally never far away from a microphone in this somewhat surreal life that we're living at present. And when that got added into the mix, I finished on Monday night with Colin Murray at 10 to 1 in the morning, sort of after one of those days of, I don't know what day of the week it is anymore, because it was fairly full on.
The idea of finishing with Colin Murray at 10 to 1 in the morning is a disturbing one. I'm just going to pause for a moment here, Kieran, while I add the name Christina to the list of names that I need to ask you about when I see you next. it was rather optimistic, I thought, at Selhurst Park on Monday night. There's four big TV screens in the back of the Arthur Waite where I sit. three of which, as usual, were showing highlights of the game, and one of which was showing the debate in the House of Commons about this, which was quite sweet, especially as there was no sound or subtitles. So, and but it was handy because it meant it created a space that we could stand in to have our drink. But the government, Boris Johnson and his government, had some quite harsh words to say to football, didn't they? I mean, they basically said, we've suggested in the past that you put your own house in order. You haven't done that, so we're taking matters into our own hand, which I thought, again, in terms of getting fans on board, was quite clever, but unusual for them to be so open about something like that with football authorities.
Yeah, I think there is a sense of frustration that, you know, football is a successful industry. There are challenges in it. Put on your big boy pants and sort it out. Mm. And that doesn't appear to have been the case. The EFL are still saying, if we have 25% of the Premier League TV money, that solves all the problems. And I'm going, I think it's a little bit more complex than that. Mm. Because every time, to be fair to the Premier League, it has increased the amount of money that is going to EFL clubs. How that should be distributed, I think, is a matter for more intense debate and more nuanced debate. But what we have seen historically is that every time there's more money going from the Premier League to the EFL, it just goes straight through into wages. So it doesn't actually address the other major issue of cost control. And, you know, in defence of the Premier League, they will point out that, you know, let's take a look at what we've got in the Championship. We've got Stoke City, and yeah, we've said Stoke City's owners are richer than God, so why should they have more money? Yeah, we've got Fulham paying at least one of their players well over £100,000 a week in the Championship, again being financed by the owner.
Yeah,
Therefore, why should the owners of, you know, Palace and Brighton and those, you know, we know where we are in the pecking order of football. Why should those clubs increase their losses in order to effectively subsidise what's happening in the EFL? So I think there's been some sort of very simplistic comments made, and you know, ideally going forwards, a lot of the recommendations, to be fair, the Premier League have not pushed back on things like the golden share and the shadow boards, you know, more emphasis on the women's game, the player development, which I think has gone under the radar, you know, because, you know, we've spoken about the fact that the failure rate. You know, I can't think of any other profession where there's a 99% failure rate within academies. And what's happening to those people? Those all appear to have effectively either gone through on the nod or not provoked a reaction. But the Premier League says there's no need for a regulator. We're doing fine by ourselves. And the FA is saying, please sir, let us be the regulator. I go, oh, hold on, you know, you're an organisation that thinks it's a good idea to have the FA Cup semi-finals on Easter Saturday when there's no transport and you can't see a problem with that. You're the person whose chair was saying only a couple of years ago that being gay is a lifestyle choice. And I go, well, that's not my experience of sexuality. I think the FA needs to get their own house in order and focus on the England team, focus on grassroots. I was talking to somebody in respect to women's football, and this was a friend of mine that runs a youth team, and he says we can't have any. And he's listening. Yeah, I live in a relatively affluent area. We can't have any women's teams on our pitches because there's no separate toilets. So,
crikey, right.
You know, and it's, you know, it's simple things like this of grassroots football which are not being addressed, and there's loads of and excuse my language. There was. A lot of the time, there's no toilets for youth teams as well. So, he's got a kids team and one of the under 12s. The parents had to drive one of the kids home to go to the toilet, part way through the match because you wanted to do a number two. and there was no, and there were no facilities there. And we're the fifth richest nation on the planet. Why on earth? These are the things which the FA should be should be focusing on and trying to identify why the facilities are so bad. Trying to run the professional game, I just don't think is part of their remit. And also, it will just be the same old faces, drops of the boys. The suits will be smiling and winking at each other, and no progress will be made.
Yeah, a couple of things there, Kieran. I'm still bracing myself for you to swear after you said, "Excuse my language," and then you said, "Went for a number two," which, by your standards, Kieran, is remarkably restrained. And we have spoken about this before. God is beyond earthly riches, Kieran. We understand that. I'm at a fundraiser tonight where Steve Parrish will be involved. So I might ask him whether he will come on the pod to discuss the Premier League's reaction to it. I can predict exactly the sort of look he will give me because he's given it to me quite often. It's a look that says, why on earth would I do that? Just while you mentioned Wembley, has there been some unease that the National League playoffs are going to be at Wembley? Is that right?
I think they're at the London Stadium.
The London Stadium, okay. Which when all the clubs involved are going to be Northern clubs, by the look of it. Is that right?
Yeah. The London Stadium as a stadium has both positives and negatives. But it's a pain in the backside to get to, and you've got to walk through a shopping centre. It's not geared towards football. I think if you talk to West Ham fans, they are uneasy bedfellows. Yeah. And I think the success that they're having this season, David Moyes has been absolutely magnificent in what he's producing on the pitch, has quietened down some of the dissent. But there's still a lack of love for that London Stadium, apart from in the boardroom, because as we had that discussion with Barry Hearn last week, it's the deal of the century.
Yeah, you say discussion. Discussion implies a two-way process. there is a way of approaching the West Ham Stadium, which takes you through lovely parks and canals, but you have to go to Hackney Wick to do that, and good luck. If you're coming from the north trying to get to Hackney Wick, you'll be at the shopping centre. Anyway, our second story, Kieran. Normally, I like to be the one who reveals the big numbers at the end, but I think it's only fair, given your background in administration and given your background in numbers, that you get to reveal the big number at the end of this story, because it's been revealed that the administrators dealing with the financial crisis at Derby are being paid, Kieran.
They've been paid £2 million is what they've clocked up to date. Now, wow. Their initial estimate was £1.5 million, and they're saying we're charging an extra £500,000, so we've clocked up these extra costs due to extra responsibilities selling the club. Well, the thing is, when you take on a job, you know what you're doing, or you should know what to expect. They're saying, the claims from Middlesbrough and Wickham, the fact that we had to appeal the points deduction. I think that cost something like £145,000. Yeah. I may be wrong. Why did you go and put in a claim against the initial points deduction for going into administration when Wigan tried exactly the same thing a year ago and they got knocked back? It's an automatic points deduction. The rules are very clear. So it's £2 million for them, but by the time you factor in the other professional advisors that they've used, the use of agents, the legal advice that they've taken, the valuers, some of the numbers you look at, they paid £15,000 for somebody to value the squad. How many days' work is that?
Yeah,
for £15,000. Yeah, it seems an awful lot of time, because. You talk to agents and say, well, we've got a rough idea. We could have done that a lot quicker. So it does seem that there have been people who have benefited from the administration. Of course, every pound spent by the administrators and the expenses that they incur, and it's a professional job, and whilst I take the mickey out of the level of fees that they do charge, they charge professional rates, and they are no more expensive than the rest. Every pound that is being wrapped up on this is £1 less for the unsecured creditors. Potentially, it's also £1 less for the taxpayer in terms of if Quantum R do try to arrange some form of haircut. And if we take a look at the money which is owed to HMRC, it was in the original estimate, it was £26 million, and they're now saying it's 35. Now, I'm not sure whether that 35 includes or doesn't include the PAYE and the tax costs run up by the administrators themselves, which they have to pay. You know, they can't get around that. MSD Holdings, they've been funding the club, but they're okay because they're going to get their money back from the sale of the stadium. And, of course, the administrators aren't in a position to sell the stadium. So, it doesn't look great. You know, it is a sensitive issue. Lots of local suppliers, and the trouble is, you know, when you talk to suppliers, they say, "Well, yeah, I'm a Derby fan myself, so yeah. I probably wouldn't have given them so much credit, but yeah, I'm a fan, so therefore, yeah, the club's not going to go bust. Everything was going fine under Morris. And I don't think anybody expected Morris to actually get bored and pull the plug the way he did. And a lot of people have suffered as a result of that. And then you see these types of numbers, and it just looks a little bit uncomfortable.
Kieran, as often happens in the pub before the Palace game, somebody asked me a football finance question. And as always in these circumstances, I said, I don't know, but I know a man who does. And basically the question was about the administrators at Derby. And it's quite a simple point. It said, look, if the administrators are being paid by the hour or by the day or whatever they are, surely there's a temptation for them to spin this out as long as possible, isn't there?
I think that's an accusation which is often made. I mean, normally we find, as far as administrations are concerned, their fees do have to be agreed by the creditors, and the biggest creditor at Derby County is Morris himself. I think, whilst I think that there is a lot of criticism that can be put in his direction, he did put in over £100 million, and he's not going to get very much of that back, apart from the stadium proceeds. I'm sure he was aware of the expected level of fees, and there will have been communication. And this could also be, when we take a look at some of the public pronouncements from Quantum R, the administrators, they have criticised everybody apart from the former club owner.
Yeah.
Because that just happens to be the person who is agreeing their fees, in effect, by being the largest creditor.
Yeah. An interim report, Kieran, into the safe standing trial that's been going on has found that it had a, and I quote, positive impact on spectator safety and improved match day experience.
Yeah. And I think this is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And to be fair, yeah, we are critical of, the administration of football at times where it is, where it is warranted. But here, the way that it's been organised, I think, we've got five clubs, I think Cardiff, Manchester United, Manchester City, and so on. I think Spurs were involved. Yeah. Have effectively used rail seats. And what we have at present at football, especially if you're an away fan, is unsafe standing at football because you're standing in the seated areas. And if you do score, if there is something exciting, people go flying over the seats. So the idea between safe standing is that it's not like the old days. You know, you and I are both familiar with standing behind the goal, and there were a few barriers somewhat randomly placed, and sometimes you stand in front of one of them, and sometimes you stand behind, but there were huge gaps in between. And when something exciting happened, you could quite cheerfully be carried 10 or 20 yards, and that was part of the fun, because you were 15 or 16 at the time and you felt you were indestructible. And nobody wants a return to that, because there were safety issues, and the tragedy of what happened at Hillsborough, which was partly due to the way that the turnstiles were organised, but also due to incompetent and frankly the quality of stewarding and policing on the day has, I don't think it's ever really been given sufficient attention in terms of that black day in the history of football. But What do fans standing up do? They tend to make more noise. If you're tall or small, you can actually probably go and stand somewhere slightly different, and you're not going to have your vision. In terms of improved match day experience, I've said this. I'm 6'3". When I often been forced to sit down at grounds, I've got my knees in, going up through somebody's ears in front of me, or I'm getting my shins battered every time because the seat in front of me is so close that every time that person moves, you've got a 20 or 30 year old seat being rammed and making your match day experience worse. So there has been a positive response from fans themselves. Against that, we've got Mark Roberts. Okay, and Mark Roberts is the chief constable that gets wheeled out and say, "Well, yeah, there's been an increase in the number of offences reported at matches," and I think Kick It Out or one of the similar organisations did bring out a report that they've had a lot more reports. But unfortunately, I think that's an indication of a change in behaviour of people post coming out of lockdown. And I'm going to Wolves on Saturday, and I'll say it now, the DDO brigade will be on the trains, and DDO stands for Dickheads Day Out, and it's people who go, there might be other people, there might be families on the train, there might be some people who are looking a bit vulnerable, but we're going to still act like dickheads. And we're going to start on the cans from the moment. And again, I've got no issue. If people want to drink on trains, that's fine. It's part of your match day out. But just you can still be nice to people.
Yeah, unfortunately, the big problem at the moment is the fact that and I never thought I'd be saying this on this pod, Kieran, but it is a finance pod, is that cocaine is now so cheap that you have a whip round and get a gram of that, and it's the same price as 5 pints of beer. That's part of the problem at the moment. I had a bruise for about 4 weeks after we equalised against Millwall in the Mickey Mouse Cup, and ended up three rows further down than where I had been standing. That's partly because that away end at Millwall is, like you say, it's not really fit for purpose, and it's so high up. Three rows further down than where you started is three rows towards a plummet towards the pitch. Mm-hmm. But the finance issue is, I think what is baffling some people is that there's no indication that a standing ticket is going to be cheaper than a seating ticket. And, of course, traditionally that was always the case. And one of the big factors behind the push for safe standing was that it would be economically more viable for those people that have been priced out of football. But that doesn't look like it's the case, is it?
I don't think so. I mean, at present, what we have seen under the changes that have it's effectively been a one-for-one swap.
Yeah.
So, and also, from the club's point of view, there's... I don't want clubs to have less money to a certain extent. If they want to reduce the price of tickets overall, that's fine. Clubs are losing money. So changes which is going to reduce revenue for the sport as a whole aren't going to work. There has been talk, if we could have 120 standing fans for every 100 seats, does that give clubs the opportunity to reduce ticket prices? Possibly. I think the areas in which we will see the safe standing is going to be behind the goals, because actually, we've now had a generation of fans, and I was I was completely opposed to seating areas. Because for me, seats are for old people.
Yeah, of course.
And I still think, even though I'm 60, I still think I'm a kid from the terraces, and stand behind the goal, and because I now supposedly sit behind the terraces, from that point of view, I think that there is, I think we need to ensure that we can have some financial stability. And when I went to see the Mission last week, I thought, bring up a. It was the same price to stand or sit, and that didn't bother me in the least. When I go to other gigs, quite often the standing tickets are more expensive because you're closer to the band or whatever it's going to be. Yeah. So, and I think there has been a change in mentality amongst us as, and I hate to use the word consumers because I don't see myself as a consumer of football. You know, football is a religion rather than a commercial product to people like you and me. And therefore, the pricing is neither here nor there. There's a broader issue in that our price is in general too expensive, but I don't think using standing versus seating is a valid exercise.
Kieran, you are a consumer when you go to Brighton. Unfortunately, it's quinoa and cheese that you consume. speaking of which, as predicted, Henry Cheese, our Brighton supporting fan from the last pod, came in for some unfortunate stick in the pub on.
Yes, I believe.
I was amazed how many people listened to the pod. One of the legendary hard men of the pub came up to tell me what you thought about Henry Cheese vis-a-vis all the other Brighton fans, or Tesco's, as he called them. Which maybe not. I'm sure Henry Cheese is a lovely man, but he's now become synonymous for everything that's wrong with Brighton.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
You mentioned the FA, Kieran, and how you thought they might not be the people to regulate the game. And here's one reason why. Because the board of the FA, and this is an interesting story, is expected to discuss the issue of conflicts of interest after it was revealed that the Premier League's interim chairman, Peter McCormick, his law firm is the one that carries out club takeover checks.
Yes. We've said on regular occasions that communication, transparency, are really critical because football, Liverpool's motto is "This means more." Yeah, their marketing slogan is "This means more." Well, football does mean more. I was talking to somebody yesterday. Says, "Well, why are you getting so fussed about it?" It says, "Well, okay, I've got an Apple iPhone now. I'm a bit of an Apple fanboy, like many people. Mm. But if Samsung came along and said, well, we'll offer you a Samsung Galaxy every year for the next 5 years, and we'll give it to you for free, I'm there. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, my loyalty to Apple is significant, but it's not overwhelming. Mm. You and I would both say this: if Brighton came to you or Palace came to me and says, "Look, we appreciate everything you've been doing for football. We're going to offer you a free season ticket for me to go and watch Palace, for you to go and watch Brighton." You say, "Thanks, but no thanks."
What we do, we'd swap.
Well, that's good
we'd
thinking,
beat,
yes.
We'd beat the system, man.
So this is in respect of the Premier League's interim chairman. He does run a law firm. That's fine. But he worked on the Newcastle takeover. Mm. Now, if his firm is earning money whilst the Premier League is making a final decision as to whether or not the PIF should acquire Newcastle United, then you go, that doesn't fit too easily. It then turns out, and again, are we being too tenuous here? Amanda Staveley's dad is a client of his law firm.
Oh.
And you go, but the Premier League now saying that you should, Amanda Staveley become the owner, and it all just looks a little bit uneasy. Now, law firms, accountants, banks, all of these organizations, they do have separate teams working on projects. They do have what's known as Chinese walls in order to prevent this. But there's a case for saying, given the extra attention that the football industry has, you would have thought that there would have been disclosure from this, from the Premier League. Mm. And instead, you know, I picked up this story from Martin Ziegler's column in The Times. And the trouble is, if you are not proactive and a story breaks, it looks as if you've got something to hide. And when it comes to football, I think the people involved, to a certain extent, have got to be a bit like Caesar's wife. Not only have they got to be virtuous, but they've got to be seen to be virtuous as well. And this looks just a little bit tacky.
Actually, I was a bit unfair to the FA in the introduction to that news story, because it is them acting as a kind of regulator in a way. So well done them. This story, Kieran, the timing of this is interesting, because in the last couple of weeks, we've mentioned several times that the owners of Blackburn Rovers, the Venkies, are actually quite willing, still after 12, 13 years, to write the checks every week to keep the club going. And yet Blackburn Rovers fan group, the Rovers Trust, have called for face-to-face dialogue with the Venkies.
Yes, and again, it goes back to that last story. You know, the problem that the Rovers Trust have is the Venkies have been ridiculously generous. Mm. Yeah, we quoted those figures on the Sunday show. And they've been benefactors who have funded the club, but from the point of view of the fan groups who have to a certain extent have now been won round. You know, the initial hostility towards the Venkies has diminished. I think fans have appreciated that their continued support has benefited the club. I think what the Rovers Trust want to know is what's in this for you? Why are you doing this? Mm. And how long are you going to continue doing this? Because, you know, they've seen what's happened. You know, if you think about where Blackburn is, and then they've got, you know, they've got Wigan, Oldham, Rochdale, Bury, Bolton. You know, Bolton. Yeah, all of these clubs within a relatively small radius of Blackburn have suffered, you know, various forms of financial distress and ownership distress. And this goes back to our very first story in terms of the recommendations of the Tracy Crouch review. One of those is, you know, the idea of shadow boards, greater fan representation, dialogue, conversation. And that's what happened. When you've got a void, when you've got, you know, no news coming out, the internet loves a vacuum, and the internet, you know, especially with Elon Musk taking over Twitter, that vacuum is going to become increasingly unmonitored by the sounds of things, and stories can fill themselves. So I'm just a great believer. Be upfront, be proactive, communicate, and, you know, why is it that Blackburn fans are doing this and Accrington Stanley fans are not? Well, it's because Andy Holt, he does talk to the fans. He talks to the fans, you know, en route to matches. He talks to fans in the bar after, and he is simply completely straight with people, and people appreciate being treated like adults and somebody who communicates in a way, this is where we are, this is what we're proposing to do, this is the amount of losses that the club can effectively fund, you know, through my being a benefactor, and these are the plans. And if you engage with people, what you always find is that their response tends to be more positive. You know, there is still ongoing uncertainty and suspicion from Blackburn fan groups, and that's why you can understand why the Rovers Trust have taken the stance that they have.
Yeah, I'm going to say that to Steve Parrish tonight. I'll say, Kieran says you just need to engage, Steve. Just come on the pod, engage. And I'll still get the same look. I'm not entirely sure what's in it for Channel 4, but they've won the rights. Well, it should be said, they've paid most money, presumably, for the rights to screen England's Nation Leagues matches this summer.
Yeah, I think this is a bigger story in the sense that Channel 4, they also won the rights, or as you said, yeah, they put in the biggest purse for the World Club Championship. You know, Chelsea are the World Club Champions, and let's face it, we don't give a damn.
No,
we've just had the Manchester City versus Real Madrid match, which was
what a game!
Benzema's penalty, the cojones to do what he did under that amount of pressure, and you go, well, that's a match that's going to long live long in the memory.
But the also, Kieran, club, as well, it's like Ed said when we're watching it, you feel like phoning up Atletico Madrid, I don't know what Atletico's number is, and just saying to them, see, that's how you do it. It's football. That's how you play it.
Yes. but I think this is indicative of the present perception of the Nations League.
Right.
In the sense that if it was, you know, if it was the European Championships, if it was the World Cup, there is no way that Channel 4 would be putting in the biggest purse, because other broadcasters would be desperate to get their hands on those rights. And I think it's also indicative of the expected level of interest. What we perceive the Nations League to be a very, very slight upgrade on a friendly. And I stopped watching England friendlies ages ago. You and I are both football mad, but it becomes a bit of a chore these days.
Mm. Our last two stories, Kieran, take us to Holland or the Netherlands, whatever they call it these days. I don't think Dutch people will care what I say it's called. They're such lovely people, which is why it's always a pleasure to go there, Kieran. But the first story is that the City Football Group, we talked about this recently, but they've now failed in their attempt to add Breda to its global portfolio after a furious backlash from the Dutch club's fans.
Yes. I absolutely love the Netherlands. Amsterdam's my favourite city in Europe. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's and also...
Kieran, Amsterdam's wasted on you. Seriously.
Well, part of Amsterdam is wasted. I went there. I remember when I went there with my cricket club for the first time, and they put me in charge of the. This is how I got the nickname the Baron. Why are you going there, Kieran? Because you don't drink and you don't take drugs. Yeah, we're trying to work out. But I said I'll negotiate. So I negotiated, shall we say, wholesale. on behalf of the team. So this is where I got this reputation from. And I did save one of my colleagues who was I don't know what it's like. I've never taken drugs. I've never drunk alcohol. I don't understand the behaviour of people when they're under that because I can't empathise to that extent. But one of my colleagues was about to go into a window with a person, and he was looking at the top half of the person, and I'd spotted something in the bottom half, which was a bonus ball, shall we say? and still to this day, every time I see him, I you do realise that I saved you from that particular activity with a transsexual, and he to be fair, he has thanked me on many, many occasions.
Has he, Kim? Really? Maybe he didn't want to be saved, Kieran. Maybe you ruined the moment in his life he was building up to. And not only we've lost BAFTA this week and the next two, they're not even going to listen to the next two pods, Kieran.
yes, there is an Iggy Pop anecdote in relation to this, which we won't go into, because I don't want to lower the tone of the show any further.
Any further. I don't think it can be lowered any further, Kieran, but carry on.
So, back to the story. NA say Breda. The fans there... this is a fantastic example of organisation. What the NSA Breda fans did, and I'll stop the Steve McLaren impersonations now.
How you sure?
Is that they got some banners, and a few of them got in their cars, and a bunch of four lads went to City's ground or City's training ground and stuck up this banner, it was fairly robust in terms of its rebuttal of the proposal of City Football Group. There is an absolutely superb Twitter account called Fanzine Derat, Derat, on behalf of Breda's fans, and they are very, very entertaining. So, what the fans did was that they put pressure on some of the shareholders. And I think there were some shareholders who between them have what we refer to as the golden share. Yeah. And it goes back to our first story. Anyway, we've got our friend Stuart, who we know who's a bit of a guru because he's a lawyer in terms of golden shares. And effectively, they went to these people and said, look, you have the ability to prevent the transfer of control of the club and its culture and its history and its heritage, which means so much to us going to City. We would feel that we were effectively becoming a feeder club. Yeah. We would feel that we were losing our identity, and Dutch people are very proud of their identity to what is effectively a global conglomerate. And as a result of that, the deal effectively was, or the proposals were withdrawn. They were rejected, and the club has preserved its natural identity. So, example of what happens in the boardroom is one thing, but fans can influence this by the old school things of don't get violent about it. Be smart, be funny, be innovative, communicate, get in the faces of people, and all of a sudden, as we saw with Super League, it was fan pressure that led to the collapse of Super League. It wasn't Christian Perslow and friends. Mm. It's again down to the fans, and they've stopped this deal going through. And City Football Group will continue to be successful, but without this particular club as part of its armoury.
Mm. I know from experience, Kieran, as well, that Rotterdam is every bit as vibrant as Amsterdam. and Feyenoord of Rotterdam have dropped plans to build a new stadium because of spiralling costs.
Yes, they were planning to move to a 63,000 capacity stadium, which surprised me. I thought it wouldn't be as big as that. The costs, I think, as a result of material costs, supply chain issues, trouble getting labour as well, the costs were estimated to go up from 385 to 425 million. I think they had taken out a loan using the stadium as collateral, and I think there was a bit of concern there because the loan was to an American bank who they weren't very keen on. They owed the tax man some. So Feyenoord's finances aren't brilliant, but I think they've made the decision here, and it's a difficult one because new stadium means new streams of revenue and increased revenue from increased capacity. But they've made that decision, and again, there's an emotional tie to an old stadium. My experience of moving from one to the other is that overall the pluses outweigh the minuses. But it looks again if the Dutch fans here are broadly happy with the decision that's been made.
Yep. Tickets are now on sale for the second Price of Football Live on Tuesday, May the 10th at the Wham Stadium, home of Accrington Stanley. Click on the link in the description of this episode or look at our social media feeds to get your tickets now. There are still a few left, only a few. And thanks to everyone who's donated to the pod via our Patreon page. People like Dom Rand, who says, I was considering cancelling my donation to POF podcast due to previous football results by Kevin and Kieran's teams against mine. But as Brighton beat Spurs, all is forgotten. Come on, you gooners. Why do I have to read out the last bit? I was perfectly happy reading it all out except for that last bit, but anyway, come on, you goons. Okay. If you'd like to make a small monthly contribution to our always free to AirPod, then please go to patreon.com/priceoffootball. And of course, if you have a question you'd like answered on our Monday questions pod, email us at questions@priceoffootball.com. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Mr. Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, as always, thanks for all the feedback, folks. And for those of you who are thinking about coming to Accrington Stanley, part of the show, we will be doing a Q&A. So for those of you who are down, I think Producer Guy does sometimes send out lists to people. You are now 923rd in the queue. if you come to the live show, we'll be doing a long Q&A show. We've got Andy Holt coming on as well, and Andy's absolutely brilliant value. And you look at the feedback from the last show, and we were delighted. Everybody had a rocking time. But if you want to support the show in other ways, one of the ways that you can do that is to go to your app from which you download your podcasts. And if you can give us a review, because the more reviews we get, the higher up the tables we appear due to the algorithms that are used by the likes of Apple and Spotify and so on. And if you can give us 5 stars, if you think we deserve it, of course you don't, you know. But it certainly helps us. And apparently it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you write. You could say you would prefer the show was presented by Iggy Pop and Steve McLaren, ideally using his Dutch accent. And it wouldn't make a blind bit of difference to me. And, you know, myself and Kevin, our egos can cope with it as well.
How you say in Dutch? Bye, everybody.
Bye.
The price of football. Price of football.